Located at Sheraton Mall.
Good afternoon and welcome aboard Flight 104 to Classics. Today, our aircraft is under the command of Captain Phil Forrester. The captain has informed me that our flying time will be approximately 3 hours to Classics International Airport. At this time, we ask that you fasten your seatbelts and increase the volume levels in your system as we perform our demonstration. Thank you for your attention. We will be airborne shortly.
Oh yeah, I like it a lot. A very good afternoon, everybody. Captain Forrester is once again in the cockpit of this magnificent aircraft. And we are heading to Classics International Airport. Flying time to our destination is exactly 3 hours, and we'll be soaring to an incredulous altitude of 104,000 feet. Now this afternoon, we'll take off towards the east of Barbados, but I have to warn you that there'll be a few bumps as we take off as a result of the belligerent wind there has been blowing across Barbados. But anyway, this aircraft is designed to stand resolute against attack of any adversarial weather. Now, along the way, you'll notice the Wyndham Samuels capsule to your left and the historic Bridgetown port away in the distance as well. And as we exit the island, the billowing smoke you'll notice coming out of a cement plant there in Checker Hall, St. Lucie. We continue in a northerly direction over the northern coast of St. Lucia. Grand Rivière, Groslay, and of course Cap Estates will be directly below us. We'll take a left turn over the Western Caribbean, over Martinique that is, into the Western Caribbean on our way to Classics International Airport. So it's going to be a smooth flight, apart from the little bumps there will be as we are about to airborne this afternoon. So we'll be serving those delicious meals, compliments of Fort Bridge Deli Sheraton Mall, and of course our fresh juices, lemonade, sorrel, tamarind will be served lavishly on our flight as well. Now keep in mind, I'm your ordained minister of classics, therefore I'll be playing those classics for you that will bring you rivers and oceans of delight this afternoon on our way to Classics International Airport. So sit back, relax, enjoy our flight. Flight attendants, prepare for departure and a cross check. Good afternoon to all of you who are in love and who wants to love. Good afternoon, everybody. Got to say good afternoon to Kiva, Jacob, and Shia. She's over there. They're over there in St. Lucia at the moment. You guys stay safe and enjoy your stay despite the reasons that you've been there for. And I got to say afternoon. Good afternoon to Melva as well. This flight is brought to you by Fort Bridge Deli Sheraton Mall and this radio station, The Beat 104, in a class by itself. We'll be back with our guest, Gabrielle Gay, right after these communications.
Trini Guyanese cuisine at its best. We've got that taste you won't forget. Foreplay Deli. Oh, how we aim to please ya. We wrap the rotis in front of ya. Great service with a smile. Got your taste buds going wild. Rice and salt, fish, chicken, lamb, and doubles on the list. You just can't refuse it at Foreplay Deli. We got the taste you won't forget.
Foreplay Deli, located at Sheraton Mall.
The Beat 104.1 FM, where FM means your favorite music.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I like it a lot. A very good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much indeed. It is a privilege to have you on board our flight to Classics International Airport on this gorgeous Sunday afternoon. I use the word gorgeous because of the weather, despite the fact that it's so hot. The present temperature is 31 degrees Celsius. The relative humidity is 65%. The wind is blowing from the east, northeast at 24 kilometers per hour. The tide is high at the moment, but it will recede at exactly 6 o'clock. That's an hour after this flight arrives at Classics International Airport. The sun will set in the northwest at 5:51 this evening, but it will rise gloriously in the morning at 6 o'clock. All right? Notice I didn't say 6 a.m. in the morning. I didn't say that. I said 6 o'clock in the morning, not 6 a.m. in the morning. I didn't say that. Then we will say 8 p.m. at night, you know. Come on, it's crazy, isn't it? Today's forecast: partly cloudy conditions are expected with a 16% chance of precipitation. So essentially, it isn't going to rain. It's going to be beautiful right through the afternoon. And like I said earlier, I'm going to say it again, as if I'm plagiarizing myself. If you're going to the beach, use loads of sunblock against your beautiful bodies. And you tourists as well, to Barbados, you have to use sunblock against your body to mitigate the chance of any adversarial health issues that may result as a result of overexposure to the sun. Like I said before, Captain Forrester isn't qualified in this regard or certified in this regard, but my common sense wisdom is informing me that I should speak to you like this. So therefore, let my voice be the clearest you hear. Now, we've had guests, and I mean, there have been so many guests over the last 10 years. I want to thank all of you who trust me with your time on a Sunday afternoons, and you trust that this flight is the one to be on, when quite frankly, you have other options and you have better things to do. So I want to thank all of you who have endorsed our flight for over the last 10 years, including Prime Minister Motley when she was leader of the opposition, Ralph Thorne, Liz Thompson, Professor Mike Arlene, Don Marshall, David Ellis, Alison Leacock, Carol Roberts, Shane Seeley, formerly of CBC, Shane Jones, Tisha Hines, and all of those professionals that are too many to mention. Thank you so much. Now, today's featured guest is an award-winning young Barbadian who is often described as incredibly talented, focused, and who is a futurist. She has collaborated her remarkable skills with a number of esteemed global entities, including the United Nations, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, the Caribbean Agency for Justice Solutions, and of course, CARICOM. Her outstanding body of work distinguishes her as Barbados's most followed youth leader and philanthropist, who has an impressive following of over 110,000 all across social media platforms, as well as a huge global reach of 630,000 online viewers each month. It really is an incredible delight to welcome on board Flight to Classics World Literacy Foundation Ambassador and Sustainable Development Champion in the Prime Minister's Office, Gabriel Gay. Good afternoon to you, Gabriel.
Good afternoon, Phil. Good afternoon, Barbados. Good afternoon to every single person on this flight. I'm happy to be here.
I feel your animation, you know what I'm saying? I like it a lot.
Thank you.
But thank you for coming. Now, it was really cool and heartwarming when you mentioned that you have been a passenger on this flight for a very long time. What do you like about it?
I love everything about it. You know, I believe that Flight to Classics is like the Emirates of entertainment and inspiration. Actually, let's go beyond that. It's a private jet to all things.
Oh my
right?
goodness.
A private jet to everyone's stories, to inspiration. It really, and I love the fact that you ask questions
Thank you
wouldn't find anywhere else.
Thank you.
So you get a real sneak peek, a real peek behind the curtain for some of the most interesting figures of our generation and past. So that's why I love it so much.
Okay, thank you so much. And I am humbled by your gracious
comments
right there.
You deserve it. You deserve it.
Thank you so much. Now, I just want to let you know that I've been among the thousands of Barbadians that have followed your extraordinary journey.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your amazing achievements. They're incredible, to say the least.
Thank you so much.
Now, I'm so glad that you're here to tell us about you, because I know that many of us are curious. Now, I want to know, how did this exciting story of yours begin? Where did you receive your early education in Barbados?
You know, thank you so much for that question. The thing about it is that, first of all, this is such a reunion for me. It's like homecoming, coming back to StarCom, because this entire journey actually started on radio. So this is very full circle for me. Before Brass Tacks, there was a show called Thomas on Thursdays, where we would speak about all things Tom Fields, all things current affairs. And at 10 years old, I would call in and give literally my opinion on everything. So current affairs, education, I guess that was a subtle, not so subtle foreshadowing, and just really talk about business, everything at 10 years old. So then I became literally overnight famous as Tom's Gabby, and became VOB Child of the Year that year as well too. And then that led to being featured in a paper and whatnot. And then in terms of education, in my formative years, I attended the Barbados Seventh-day Adventist primary and secondary schools.
Well, that's awesome. Now, your journey has been characterized as a one-man mission to a global movement. I suppose largely because at the age of 13, you formed the Gabriel Gay Award for Excellence in Reading and Literacy Mentorship Program. Mm-hmm. As it was, quite frankly, your radical belief that education should be accessible to everyone. Now, what would you say fueled the idea that there was inequity regarding the accessibility to education in Barbados?
You know, we call it solution-oriented thinking right now. That's the term for it. But back then, for me, it was just plain old common sense. So being at school, being around my contemporaries at a time, I recognize that for me, I've always been a voracious reader, always intrinsically motivated to read. But when I looked around at my friends and contemporaries, I recognize they were not as excited, right, to get into the textbooks and to read. So what I recognized then at that young age is that all children learn differently. So some children have learning challenges, some are visual learners, auditory, some like touch, palpable. So what I decided then is that we have to open access to literacy by making it come alive. So let's take these books that we have to read, turn them into interactive story times, make them palpable, make them visual, make them auditory, so that all students can enjoy, and then make literacy something that is personal and successful for every student. And that is how the Gabriel Gay Award for Excellence in Reading and Literacy Mentorship Program was born. And then what I did as well is that I added a reward element too, because I recognized that you can have all that, but then there's some children who just need a pat on the back, right? They just need an extra level of encouragement. So we also then had a trophy, an award, that was given at the 11 plus graduations for either the highest achieving reader or the most improved reader of that graduating class.
Now, it's amazing to have read that at such a tender age, you were able to mobilize schools in Barbados into becoming part of your vision.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
You know, it was really organic. The journey was so beautifully organic. So what would happen is that I started with my allowance in 5 schools, right? So just started off, major shout out to my mother, Mrs. Margaret Gay. You know, I was sitting in my bed, told her what I wanted to do. She said, okay, let's go for it. And started with my allowance in 5 schools. And what would happen is that every time I would do a story time in one school, or we would give the award at a graduation in one school, undoubtedly there would be family members, there would be other children there. And they'd say, well, why don't we have this? Like, we want this too. And then we would go to another school. And quite literally, that is how we exploded across the intellectual landscape of Barbados.
Now, this is interesting because I've learned that you launched back then. Your launch back then stood the test of time, the extent to which it has now become the most awarded there has been in the Caribbean, the Americas, and globally. Now, what do you attribute to its longevity, and how would you reflect on the accomplishments of the Gabriel Gay Award for Excellence and Mentorship Program?
You know, honestly, I wish I could give one of these really dramatic and glamorous answers, but I prefer the truth.
Yeah.
Phil, it was consistency and innovation. That is literally the unbeatable repeatable formula for success. I was consistent. So I continue to have high quality of story times, and we continue to innovate every year. So every time we would add schools, we'd also add partnerships. So we've partnered with Giving Tuesday, the government of Barbados, lots of private sector companies as well. And then always having my ear to the ground as well too. So when children would come, parents would give feedback and whatnot, we would consistently implement that. So it's really that golden formula of consistency and innovation. And I would recommend that to anyone. If you want to start something, you want to be successful, be willing to go the distance, because people see our reach of 10 million professionals and leaders now. But as I said, it started in 5 schools with my allowance. So you have to be willing to walk that path in your purpose and to stay the course.
Oh yeah, man, that's a profound word right there.
Thank you. And I
use the word profound again. You are profoundly multi-skilled based on your incredible body of work. What's fascinating, I find, is that your story essentially represents a coalition of probably the widest range of interests I've known. Now, I'm talking about youth leadership, education, community service, philanthropy, sustainable development, consultancy, membership, women's empowerment. You're now pursuing a law degree, creating viral social media content, and managing your own foundation. And by the way, these are just a few. Now, I want to talk to you about youth leadership, though. How would you describe your role as a youth leader? And to what extent have your achievements amplified the way in which young Barbadians who contribute positively to our nation is appreciated?
You know, I believe it's a very popular saying that we have, that when we live in our light and shine our light, we unconsciously give others permission to do the same. And that's really what it is. By walking boldly in my purpose, I've unconsciously given so many incredible youth leaders across Barbados and around the world that permission to do the same. And I believe that it shines a light, because the thing about me is that I've always used my platform to showcase others. So I've done a myriad of partnerships with like CARICOM Youth Ambassadors, UN Youth Advisory Group. I'm always finding a way to highlight, right? And that's even the sustainable development goal number 17, partnership for the goals. So in my walk, by bringing others along with me and facilitating these incredible partnerships that have benefited millions in Barbadian society and around the world, then that leads to youth leadership being appreciated, because then people have a tangible and palpable just evidence of the fact that when young people decide to do great and they decide to focus on positivity, look at the beauty and look at the positive trajectory that can be achieved, particularly through education for society and beyond. So I do believe that that's how my role in leadership has allowed others and others to come to be appreciated as well.
And to your point, I get the impression, though, that this is all about your spirituality and your spiritual walk, and it is intense, isn't it?
Yeah. I have to give all glory to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Like, it is a gift. God gives us gifts, and we're all like, Philip, you are a cultural legend, an artisan, you're a restaurateur, you are a radio host. These are gifts that God has given you. And look, you're using your gift to give me a platform here today.
Thank you. I'm delighted
I'm honored.
I'm delighted to do that, quite frankly, to have you here.
Thank you.
I want to speak briefly about an issue that's of concern to all Barbadians. I want to talk about the gun crime situation in Barbados. I'm aware that you have very strong views.
Yes.
In relation to this. Having said that, though, as a youth leader, what have you learning? What have you been learning regarding its causation?
Yeah, you know, firstly, before I answer the question, I just want to say rest in peace to Seanathan and to all of the victims who have been affected, innocent victims that are affected by gun violence, and just massive love to your families. And yes, I have strong views, because I believe that education is actually a deterrent for crime. So I know someone listening is probably wondering, what is the nexus between education and crime and lowering of crime rates? And if there's actually a study that came up by the World Bank that noted that educational attainment is actually inversely correlated to the decline in crime rates. And they noted that for every year of additional schooling, that the likelihood of engaging in criminal activity actually decreases by 10%. So the more educated our society is, the less crime actually occurs. Why? Because people then have expanded academic horizons. They then learn new perspectives. They get more avenues besides crime. They become educated to more avenues besides crime. And then they're simply more engaged. I mean, anyone who's studying right now, a degree in anything, knows that your time is taken up. So less time on the block and more time in the books. So yeah. That's how education actually becomes a deterrent for crime. And that's why I'm so passionate about ensuring that our youth and professionals overall continue to develop themselves through educational attainment.
Well, you know, it's amazing to hear you say that because counter to what you are saying, mm-hmm. there is a view that tougher legislation is the antidote and perhaps deterrent. What are your thoughts, though?
You know, I have a balance, almost like a hypothetical homeostasis when it comes to this, in that, firstly, there is a lot of studies that show, I know there's a sentencing project that came out in 2024. There's also the research by Bruce Western in 2018 that shows that even though you increase the actual sentencing and you make it harsher, there really wasn't much change in percentages with regards to crime falling. What they recognized that there were greater changes when there was rehabilitation, right? And programming in communities and positive representation seemed to actually produce more positive results on average for crime decline. So that's my perspective. However, I'm also a proponent for legislative reform because I do understand that there is a sector of society that will be deterred because they're like, you know what? I do not want to spend 25 years at that hotel in St. Philip. So I don't want to do that. So I think it's really, I believe in hybrid of both. Let's focus on education, rehabilitation, as well as legislative reform so that we then create a 360-degree solution that works for as a deterrent across the board. That's my perspective.
Now, which brings me to the next item that's relative to what you're saying. Now, I read that you're a final year student in law. Mm-hmm. At UWI.
Yes.
Why did you choose law rather than other options that might have been out there for you?
I almost feel like law chose me, though.
Okay.
I feel like law chose me. Yes, of course, I definitely chose law at 5 years old. I really had like this moment when I was watching, I believe it is Walker, Texas Ranger. Don't quote me on that.
I thought it was Crown Court.
Right? One of those, because it definitely was one of those crime-based shows. And I saw this lady, beautiful suit, hair coiffed to perfection. And she's walking up the stairs of the Supreme Court. And an individual asked her, well, who are you? And she's like, well, I'm the district attorney and I'm here to help you. And in watching that episode, I saw how she used the law. She was a servant of the Constitution to assist these individuals. And I said, that
is what you want to do.
Is what I want to do. Well, and yeah, that's stuck with me ever since. And I'm pursuing that path.
Now, the study of law, as I know it, traverses quite an expansive area mm-hmm. of the legal profession. Now, having said that, is there an area of law, though, in which you plan to make your specialty?
Yes, please. My specialty, I want to be in artificial intelligence, Web3, and cryptocurrency law. So anything that deals with our rights, advocating for the rights and safety of citizens on online, cybersecurity, anything legal technology, that is where I want to focus my rights on. Because the internet is almost like the wild, wild west, all right? And then with the internet, as we know it right now, is called Web 2, and then we have the emerging and decentralized internet, which is like blockchain, Web 3, and all of these now come with so many considerations for rights, usage of information, your privacy rights, how, for example, we're now having an evolution of contracts to something called smart contracts, which are created on the blockchain, which are read by AI, which means that lawyers now have to know about AI to be able to read these contracts. So those are the areas that I'm particularly interested in. And how we can continue to progress the legal profession in these emerging areas. So that's what I want to specialize in.
And it is against that background I want to ask this next question. And you are involved with a wide range of different interests.
Yes.
Of educational, social, and economic transformation. How do you see the virtues of becoming an attorney at law as it relates to empowering you to serve and to understand effectively all of these different interests?
You know, as I said earlier, being a lawyer, and I know we get a bad rap, and in many ways, rightfully so, the profession has definitely had its challenges, right, in terms of morality and reputation. But at the core of it, being a lawyer is being a servant. That is what you are. I know there's a lot of ego and, as I said, these types of stereotypes attached to the profession. But really, what you're here to do is to serve, interpret the Constitution, provide that knowledge, extrapolate it, and use it to defend and uplift others in society. So coming from a background of community service, helping others, I would have grown up, you know, seeing my mother, like she is literally known for that. My grandmother, Earlene Bradshaw, who my foundation is named after, was literally a bastion for community service and education in our community. So it's in my DNA to use the law to uplift. So that is how I see the legal profession being simply just another mechanism to do good for society.
Now, I have to say, though, because I'm listening to you speak and I'm ingesting and enjoying your your beautiful use of language. It is
quite pleasing
to the ear, though. It really is. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, as you are aware, our world is in a state of acute technological transformation.
Yeah.
The legal profession has been impacted as a result. Now, having said that, how do you see the role of AI, the role AI will play in the future of the criminal justice system and by extension, the legal profession?
Artificial intelligence will literally and has begun already to completely obliterate and
obliterate,
yes. And then also simultaneously reinvigorate the legal profession. So some background. So the World Economic Forum just released its state of, you know, jobs report, and it literally predicted that by 2030, which is 5 years away, 39% of jobs and skills as we know it will be either erased or completely impacted.
That's frightening.
That's frightening. Mm-hmm. But it's only frightening if you're not someone that is willing, and I'm going to say someone, I mean, in the legal profession in this case, to open your mind and learn more. So how is AI going to change the legal profession? A really great quote that I heard was when I attended the Central Bank's AI policy, their Sir Winston Scott Moore lecture. I've been speaking to Dr. Vidigare, who's an AI expert. He said, lawyers will not lose their jobs to AI, right? It's lawyers who don't know AI that will lose their jobs. So what does this mean? AI is, for example, is creating new areas of practice. So let's use OpenAI, ChatGPT, as an example. ChatGPT right now is going through some legal issues because when they created the platform, they scraped data from across the entire internet without permission. So now it's creating a huge area now of intellectual property with regards to large language models. That's an entire, because we have Claude, we have ChatGPT, we have you.com, we have all of these different large, Gemini by Google, we have all of these different large language models that have scraped data without permission. That's an entirely new area of practice. Then, as I mentioned earlier, we have the NFTs, non-fungible tokens, who are governed in many ways by smart contracts. How can lawyers, and how are they going to read smart contracts if they don't know anything about Web3 and cryptocurrency? That's an entire different area of profession, of the legal profession. And then finally, let's look at another new area of practice, but also be non-consensual artificial intelligence intimate imagery that has been generated. So what individuals are doing, unfortunately, is taking photos predominantly of women and using AI to generate very lascivious images without these individuals' consent. So that's an entirely different area now of rights, and they're doing it to children as well. Oh. So that's just an example, just three alone, of how AI is changing the legal landscape and what lawyers will have to contend with now and predominantly and growing over the next 5 to 10 years. So that's how it's going to change. And what's the solution then? Greater reform and lawyers being open. And it doesn't matter if you're at King's Counsel level, this is stuff that you would never have experienced over the last few years. So now it's going to take lawyers being open to, as I said, greater legislative reform, sounding their voices, as well as deeper study, going back to school and learning about Web3 and learning about AI to take the profession forward.
Now, my common sense wisdom is probing me in a very serious way to ask you this question. Now, we spoke about AI, and you said something that a lot of people will lose their jobs as a result.
Yes.
How would the job market then absorb all those people that have lost their jobs?
That is a very good question. I think what's going to happen is that these individuals are going to mostly just have to reskill and re-enter the profession. Because I know it seems like doom and gloom, but all is not lost.
But this is just one profession. What about, you know?
Yeah, you know what? I think honestly, and I just have to be very, very honest, there are always going to be casualties of progress, right? I think what is us, yeah, as futurists, for us, we warn and we show the trends, we create solutions, but we'll get into later our education programs that upskill individuals and certify them in this regard so they're prepared for these shocks in the job market. But we can only do so much. It comes down to professionals to take that initiative and upskill and educate yourself so that you don't be the one that's left behind.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Listen, man, we're having a great conversation.
I love it.
Thank you so much. And the knowledge and the education that's coming out of this flight. And by the way, the theme of this flight, as you know, is information, conversation, music, information, conversation. Yes. And I know that all of our passengers have received, you know, a lot of what you said earlier. And there is more to come right after these records.
Oh,
these classics.
Love it. I cannot wait.
I'm going to play right now for you. Here is Madonna from the 1980s. And you heard the sounds right there, the drum machine and the synthesizer, the Poly 61 they used to have back in the day. Yeah, and the Oberheim. You know what I'm saying? And the Yamaha DX7. Oh, yeah. Good afternoon. So we know this. Girls want to have fun, but they also want a man who's intelligent, though. Don't go when they call Nigga a beautiful lady, but big man and all of that. Come on, man. Big man. You know, and don't try to impress her with your car, though, because she's got a bigger one. All right? That new two that you're talking about. She's got a Range Rover, though. You know what I'm saying? And don't try to tell her, but you have a bachelor's degree, though. She's got a doctorate, all right? So be careful, guys. So despite the fact that girls want to have fun, you got to be super intelligent, though. You got to be multidimensional like Captain Forrester and Malcolm X. Keep that in mind. We continue right now. This afternoon, baby, on Flight to Classics, the Ministry of Music, Information and Conversation, that's Cyndi Lauper from 1986. And we continue.
1984.
1984, right.
That's right.
I humbly apologize to
that's
my innocent indiscretion right there.
Yeah, that's all good.
Innocent. But we continue right now with Whitney Houston, who I had the pleasure of seeing in Madison Square Garden. And I always remember when she sang this record, everyone like stood up and everyone was going crazy. And then after this record, she sang Saving All My Love For You, and everyone started crying. How will I know? Trini Guyanese cuisine at its best. Foreplay Deli's got it. We've got that taste you won't forget. Foreplay Deli. Oh, how we aim to please ya. We wrap the rotis in front of ya. Great service with a smile. Got your taste buds going wild. Rice and beef, salt, fish, chicken, lamb, and doubles on the list. You just can't refuse it at Foreplay Deli. We got the taste you won't forget.
Foreplay Deli, located at Sheraton Mall.
The Beat 104.1 FM, where FM means your favorite music.
And I have to say without fear of contradiction that there isn't a promo or commercial that I know that encircles exactly what a business does. More than that one you just heard there, written by Shane Forrester and produced by Shane Forrester as well. The Foreplay Deli commercial of wrapping the rotis in front of you. It's quite ingenious, to be honest, because the thing about it, I always believed in the democratic process. You know, back in the day, when I first came to Barbados, there was a roti place on the south coast right there where First Citizens is in that spot now. But remember ordering a beef and potato roti. When I came home, the guy had a different kind of roti in there. I mean, I really can't call the name. You know what I'm saying? You know, despite the fact that they're no longer in existence. But it speaks a lot of how undemocratic it was back then. But having said that, the idea of having our food displayed right there in front of you, it gives the customer a chance to make that choice, that democratic choice, because they're spending the money, isn't it? And of course, you can make the choice that you want to choose. And we have been quite ingenious in that regard. And we've also allowed the customer to come up with things. For example, the super roti that we have now, it was first a combo roti, came from this guy who I've never seen before, but I like to use the word insolent to describe him, but he wasn't, quite frankly. But his whole approach was, big man, I hungry as can't say on the radio. Man, I want that roti there, man. Listen, I want some of that. That's okra you got there. Put some of that in there. So I want some of that pumpkin there, though. He didn't say pumpkin, he said pumpkin. I want some of that channel, you know. I want some of that. What's that you got there? But that bora? I want some of that bora too. But I put all of there, big man, and charge me, big man. But in his own way,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
He just wanted
innovation,
everything.
Yeah.
And then you came, you said, you know something? I better do something.
I was educated to a new place that I can go regarding what I do.
Exactly.
You see, because in those days, it was just chicken and potato, beef and potato, and potato, and,
right.
and you done. This brother has opened a new way, and I've never seen him again to thank him.
Yeah.
For the way he has taken the business to another level.
Wow.
Of being able to be diverse, you see.
Yes.
And now this super roti, as it were, is one of our biggest sellers, man.
Wow.
Isn't that something? The praise be to that brother. And we have these also what you call low carb plates. And that again had been an initiation by the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Because people now, oh, I don't want carbs, I don't want the rice, but I want the vegetables and they want the meat. So we put a name on it. The low carb plate, you see.
Ooh.
So a lot of what we do now has been instrumented by the voices of the people.
That's beautiful.
And that is what democracy is about,
yeah.
You know, the people's choice. And we're delighted to have our constituents constantly supporting us, generation after generation. I want to say good afternoon to Reginald Farley, who had been my first customer in 1997.
Wow.
It was the late, great Lashman Kassoon. His family continues to support Four Play Deli.
That's beautiful.
So there was that legacy of support that continues, upon which the business stands. And I want to thank all of those constituents. And just in case you want to make an order this week, you can call Captain Forrester, my benevolent voice. I'm not like trying to like be hyperbolic here, not at all. I'm just saying.
I know that they know that I love the lamb roti.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Gab loves the lamb roti.
I love the lamb roti.
It's going to go off the
100%.
Shelf.
100%.
The lamb roti, right?
I endorse the lamb roti, okay?
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my favorite order.
Yeah, and we have now our Republic roti.
Oh.
Now, hear this. Nice. Since Barbados has become a republic, I was thinking about what can I do, though, to incorporate that republic status with what we do here? And it essentially is a coalescing of all the meats in one roti. I mean, it is so ingenious and beautiful. No one else does it, though.
Exactly.
The beef, the lamb, the chicken, the saltfish, all in one roti. My goodness. Incredible is the word. But you don't have to believe me. Come visit Four Play Deli Sheraton Mall. We're open from Tuesday until Saturdays from 11 a.m. in the morning to 7 p.m. at night. You heard that? 11 a.m. in the morning. To 7 p.m. at night. There you go. All right. But let's continue right now with the conversation. Now, again, I want to thank you for being in our presence this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
It is
a blast.
Awesome, to say the least. Now, we spoke earlier about your progressive compliments, and you heard me use the word progressive.
Mm-hmm.
And the scope of your many ambitions, it is quite fascinating, to say the least.
Thank you.
So it's therefore against that background I'd like to ask you about the Earlene Bradshaw Foundation and the Femilex Cohort, both of which you founded. Yeah, I'm so sorry about the mispronunciation. What would you say influenced the idea of those two foundations?
Mm-hmm.
And how would you describe the characteristics and vision of Femilex Cohort in particular? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Okay, so the Earlene Bradshaw Foundation, of course, started with the work of the Gabriel Gay Literacy Award program.
Mm-hmm.
And then that started when I was 13. The Femilex Cohort now is our legal mentorship education program initiative. And that was actually born out of the pandemic. So, you know, I'm studying at home. And I just recognize that because even the United Nations stated that the pandemic disrupted 94% of education worldwide. And of course, Barbados was not immune to that. And I recognize that it exacerbated, you know, issues that we were already having. And one of the issues that we were having already in the legal sphere for women was just a lack of mentorship and representation, particularly for women from small island developing states, from marginalized communities, and just women who wanted to grow and evolve in emerging areas such as eco-technology justice. So Let me define ecotechnology, Justice.
I was going to ask you that. What was it? It's got off my head.
Yes. So essentially, ecotechnology, Justice, I just want to put this on wax. That was coined by myself and the Erlen Bradshaw Foundation.
Congratulations.
So if you hear it anywhere else, all right, it came from Barbados, you. Gabriel Gay.
Don't get sued.
I'm telling you, we did the research, ecotechnology justice, and essentially it's the nexus of technology, the law, and climate. So what we recognize is that, especially for vulnerable states like Barbados and others that are affected by the climate crisis, what I recognized is that a lot of the solutions are being created in silos. So we're having the lawyers, the politicians, they're creating policy. We have technology professionals and students, they're doing their thing over there. And then the climate professionals and students, they're working on their end. But what I recognize, for example, a lot of individuals will be shocked to recognize that ChatGPT uses the amount of water, every query uses the amount of water that almost an entire country uses. Now, if you multiply that by how many of us, because we're all guilty, at some point of using these large language models around the world, using these technologies every single day, can you imagine the amount of electricity and the sheer terror and havoc this is wreaking on the climate? So who is holding these technology giants accountable? Right now, nobody. Right? It's just happening, right? It's just happening because technology is moving faster than the law.
Yep.
So what I recognize then is that we need to have all of these individuals to come together. So then that's why I created the term then eco-technology justice, where we bring a nexus of policy and frameworks that advocate for renewable energy in the technology sector, along with criminalizing things like artificial intelligence, non-consensual intimate imagery, and all these different things, and working together. So the FemLets cohort then brings over 300,000 Phil women of the brightest change makers minds in law, climate, and technology together to advocate and create solutions in this regard. So that's how it all got started, and that was really my just drive and impetus to create that program.
That's awesome. Now, you mentioned women, and I have to ask you the next question. You have been a champion for women's rights and empowerment.
Yes.
Suffice to say, women have largely emancipated themselves from the colonial perception mm-hmm. that they are secondary to men. Now, how gratifying has it been for you to be perceived as being a trailblazer, if you like, for this progressive movement of the modern day woman?
You know, first of all, I'm very humbled, and you know, to see how the FemLets cohort has changed, literally changed the entire trajectory for academia and for women in the Caribbean and around the entire world, because we're in 77 plus countries across the entire globe, and we touch every single continent of the world. But I do want to prefix my incoming statements by saying that, you know, sometimes people hear women empowerment, they think, oh, we hate all men, and you know, that is not the case over here. Actually, our program's motto is actually called equity via opportunity, because we believe that men are actually very important. They are very important mm-hmm. to the equation. We believe in partnership. We believe that healthy masculine men are great for leadership. What we're seeing, though, is that women in their own rights as well have their own strengths and also can lead and also can contribute to change making. So for me, that is the balanced view of what women's rights means. It means that we respect men and their strength and their genius, but also we make allowances for women to upskill and educate themselves through our Ecotechnology Justice FemLets cohort program or any academic avenue that they so choose. So I feel very honored to be a proponent of such a balanced and harmonious ideology for the betterment of society.
Now, there are several distinguished global organizations that you've showcased your incredible skills with. I mentioned a few of them earlier. But I want to ask you, though, how did the opportunity to synergize with the United Nations, UNICEF, mm-hmm. the World Trade Organization in particular, come about? And what has essentially been the nature of those collaborations?
Yeah. Okay, great question. So United Nations, that came about in two aspects. So I was actually the first and only Barbadian right now and Caribbean youth leader to be selected for the United Nations Youth Advisory Group in the area of education. So I came on board with a cadre of absolutely phenomenal young people from across the entire region. Of course, my specialty was education, and we came together to advise United Nations on policies moving forward. So that is how being on that board is how I was able to create those connections and really become one and a partner with the United Nations, and they have supported the FemLex cohort from the start. I also am the first and currently the only United Nations Archipelagic Island States Ambassador. And that is really cool because the EIS Forum brings islands from around the entire world. So we're talking Fiji, Seychelles, like if there's an island, they're represented, right? And I think that was beautiful to meet my island comrades from around the entire world. And that's the same thing advising with regards to climate and climate justice. And then with the World Trade Organization, I was an UNCTAD 15 delegate, which is held here in Barbados. Such a proud moment. Shout out to the government of Barbados for that. And I also participated there, but I must give credence to two organizations, CARICOM, who we had a historic partnership with. We were the first education foundation in the entire Caribbean and in the history of CARICOM to be selected to partner with them for the FemLex cohort, and also Blockchain Lex Group. I have to shout out Blockchain Lex Group, who came on board. They teach all of our Web3 and cryptocurrency modules, and they've supported us in just promoting technology and also partnering with us for the No Long Ting web program. So shout out to them as well too.
Awesome. Now, many of our passengers may not know this, but you are Sustainable Development Champion in the Prime Minister's office.
Yes.
How would you describe your role in this regard?
So exciting. So the Prime Minister's office has a specialized project called SDGs Barbados. So what they've done over the past years, and it will culminate in 2030, is to chronicle Barbados's development and improvement and progress with the Sustainable Development Goals. Of course, there are 17 Sustainable Development Goals. So my focus is number 4. Quality education. And I'm also joined by Ashley Lashley and Maria as well.
Ashley Lashley was here, actually.
Yeah, see? And they're also SDG champions for climate. They're for climate. I'm for education. And we've also had Tahir Babulia as well. And he worked with like sport and decent economic growth. So what we do with that project, as I said, is to chronicle the progress and then also to educate and inspire Barbadians to know that yes, Ernie Bradshaw Foundation reached 10 million people, but you are a sustainable development champion too in your own right. And you can do that in your own community. Do you like to cook? Do you like sports? You know, what is your talent that you can use to drive your communities forward successfully? So that's what a project is about. And all of this will culminate to a global sustainable development report. And I'm pleased to say that Barbados, I believe we rank, I think it is 80 something out of 100 countries. So we rank actually very high within the top 100 for the SDG. So we're doing very, very well. And I'm extremely, extremely honored. And I want to say thank you to the Prime Minister's office for selecting me for such an honor.
Oh, well, thank you for that explanation. Now, I mentioned in my opening remarks about philanthropy.
Yes.
Now, philanthropy is the practice of giving time, talent, and resources to improve the lives of others without seeking after remuneration. Now, this has been an integral dimension of your incredible journey, to say the least. To what extent has your upbringing been the shoulders upon which this remarkable quality in you stand?
You know, Phil, you can never underestimate the power of meticulous and excellent socialization. It is because of the way that I have been raised. I have to give credit firstly to God and then to my mother, Mrs. Margaret Gay. The values that have been inculcated within me, the example that has been set for me by my mother and by just members of my family. My grandmother, as I said, she was instrumental in post-colonial Barbados. She was the one that said, because back then school went to 7th standard, that's what they called it, and people would leave and go back into the fields. She was the one, she put her foot down. She said, not on my watch. We're going to put our money together in what we call a susu or a meeting, and we're going to send these children to school. They're not going back in the fields. And that was the genesis of the educational revolution in our community, right? So it's in my DNA. right, to have this forbearance to do this work. And I couldn't do it, I said, without all the amazing organizations that we just spoke about, private sector, public sector, and my family, my mother. Those are the rocks, and Christ is the foundation of all this work that I do.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I want to talk about your recognition.
Yeah.
In this regard, your awards and recognition you've received as a result of your exemplary work are innumerable, to say the least. I'm talking about LinkedIn Top Voice and for Leadership, the Sustainable Development Champion for Education in the Prime Minister's Office Award, you just mentioned that. Yeah. The United Nations Youth Advisory Group Representative for Barbados and the OECS, imagine that. Strategic Advisor to Caribbean Regional Youth Council Policy and Advocacy Committee, World Literacy Foundation Ambassador, and UWI KFL Campus and UNICEF Outstanding Student of the Year. I mean, that's quite extraordinary.
Thank
now,
you.
Which of those awards, I mean, and there are many more, too many to mention,
yeah.
But which of those awards would you say speak to you the loudest? Which of those accolades speak to you the loudest, rather?
You know, Phil, I have a very interesting answer for this that probably is a little bit unexpected. The accolade that speaks to me the most and the title that has touched me the most is when my ambassadors and the children and the youth and professionals come to me and say, you are a genuinely authentic person.
Mm.
That's the title
yeah.
that touches me the most, right? Because I think all of us have been in our various industries, we've met a lot of people who have really great titles, but they don't move with integrity. They're terrible people. And the title that has touched me the most is when I have ambassadors and certain students and professionals come to me and say, you've changed my life and you stayed in the trenches with me. Because when I do my programs, I don't send a representative and disappear. I'm there every class. Yeah. I am at every graduation. I am in the story times jumping around with the children. I am in the sessions mentoring. I am there hands on. So when that is the title that means the most to me, when people say you're a great mentor, you're an authentic person, you're a good person, you've provided an opportunity for me and you didn't want to take anything from me. You didn't want to, it wasn't to fool me or beguile me. You just gave me this opportunity to change my life, and not just my life, because when you educate somebody, you change their entire generation's trajectory.
Now you
understand?
You have essentially abased yourself wonderfully in that regard.
Thank you.
Because there are people who look for accolades, you
yeah.
see? They want to be called, oh yeah, sir, yeah. You know what I'm saying? But I'm glad that you're, despite what you do, this accumulation of goodness about you,
yeah.
you're still humble enough to say, you know what, it ain't about me, it's about the people that
yeah.
I serve. Now, what's also interesting is that you have been described as a futurist.
Yes.
A futurist. How would you explain that?
Okay, so a futurist essentially is an individual or person in any field. You could be a futurist in any field, but it's largely associated with technology. So anyone who works or is affiliated with technology in any way, basically you foresee problems and you create solutions for problems that have not even existed as yet. So you are a futurist because you see into the future and create solutions, or what you're doing is that you're actively creating solutions for problems that have not blown out of proportion and become extreme crises as yet. So you're creating that adaptation and those mitigation strategies and those solutions before it becomes even worse in the future. So I'm an education futurist because I create programs that touch problems that haven't even occurred as yet, and also are creating solutions for problems that are currently occurring. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I have to say this to you, because as I read your entire story, that like I said, it's so expansive and interesting and intriguing as well. Absorbing, in other words. It really is inconceivable that one Barbadian woman could be so involved simultaneously.
Yes.
With such a myriad of interests. I want to ask you, though, to what extent does it test your forbearance?
Oh, it tests it every single time. Every single time. I'm very happy that you asked this, by the way. You see, this is why I love this flight. This is why I love this flight, right? Because, you know, people tend to focus on the laurels all the time and they don't really ask you about the behind the scenes. So firstly, leadership is lonely. Let's start there, right?
Yeah.
I tell people that all the time. When you're an innovator and you're creating solutions, especially for things that people have not seen as yet, but you have already done the research, you can see that it's incoming, it can be a lonely road. And then, and it takes a while for you to find your tribe. So there's that. And then, of course, it's taxing as well, like physically, because I put a lot of hours into it. And what I've come to learn is that rest is also resilience, right?
Yeah.
You have to learn to rest. And I recognize that the more I rest and take care of myself, I'm a better leader. Mm-hmm. I just have more in my cup, proverbial cup, to then pour into the people that I serve. So yes, I have definitely experienced burnout before, but I have an extremely amazing mother. I have the Lord as well too, that I cast my cares upon. And then I also have like a community of great women around me as well, and friends who care about me. And I think that's very, very important when you're in leadership or any type of public figure. Do not have yes men around you. Have people that care about you, right?
And
tell you, it's time to slow down. Mm-hmm. Close the laptop, yeah. Gabrielle. And then other times, you know, just to continue to guide you and care and pour into you when you're feeling low. So that is how I get through the rough periods of this journey.
I'm glad you mentioned rest, because there is optical evidence that you beautifully rested. Look at you, girl.
Thank you.
I like it a lot. I like it a lot.
Thank you so much.
Now, we're approaching the twilight of our conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to touch on these last couple of items. And I have to say, though, I marveled by the fact that your work has resonated with so many people all over the world. It is quite extraordinary. But having said that, how would you summarize this exciting journey of yours, which essentially began when you were 13 years old? Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. I would say three words: purpose, passion, and futurism. Mm. Right? Purpose, because I very instinctively knew from a young age that this is what I was meant to do. I was meant to be a lawyer. I was meant to assist others via education. Passion, because at the end of the day, you have to actually like it, because there will be rough days. There will be rough days and rough times, but you have to have that genuine passion for helping people. That's what revitalizes me when I'm tired. And then I talk to my ambassador, I talk to all the students and the professionals in our community. It reminds me of why I'm doing this. And then futurism, remaining open to innovation, remaining open to educating yourself as well too. Mm-hmm. That's how I stay ahead of the pack. That's how our programs continue to be so innovative, because I am humble enough to continue to be a student, not just academically, but a student of life.
Life, yeah.
As well too.
Continues
because education is a school of hard knocks as well, huh? Life. So by combining those three factors, and I'll also add fourth one, faith as well too. If you're someone who is spiritual, or you just believe in something bigger than yourself, holding on to that as well too. And that is how I was summarize this dynamic journey, and those are the facets that I believe that anyone could use to take their lives forward.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean,
thank you.
I'm sitting here like in total awe.
Thank you.
Listening to that amazing summary.
Yeah.
But lastly, this is an item of national interest, mm-hmm, that I'd like to raise with you. President Trump's announcement of the new U.S. trade policy has, quite frankly, piqued the interest of all Barbadians, as there is a desperate concern, mm-hmm, that if this trade war becomes attritional, it could be excruciating for us. Having said that, how do you see the implications for small island development states like Barbados of the recently imposed tariffs by the U.S. administration? And what ideas do you have with respect to the direction in which Barbados now needs to take in order to mitigate the imminent economic concussion, mm-hmm, and you heard me use the word concussion.
Yeah, it's a shock. It's going to be
that all of us are mindful of.
Well, aren't we ending this flight spicily with a crescendo? I love it. So yes, I have a very unique view on this. I'm very happy that you asked me about this. So yes, the global tariff policy, the US trade policy, for us, the things that's really directly is going to affect us is that global tariff, 10% tariff, which of course means that any goods that we export out of the region into America will attract higher prices, consumer end prices, because of course his goal is to prioritize American products for consumers. So it means our products are going to be more expensive, which increases the chance then of less people buying them and consuming them. And economists actually predict that this policy will increase consumer end prices by 2.3% globally. So how do we then mitigate that as Caribbean? So the first thing I say, we need a trifecta solution. And I'll also say is that I know that everybody's panicking, but I think because my brain, how I see things, I see it as an opportunity for growth. I see it's potentially a positive thing because in the Caribbean, sometimes we're very reactionary. We kind of need something to light that proverbial fire under us. So I think this actually could be seen as a positive thing. How so? So in terms of solutions, there could be a trifecta. So education, policy reform, and also a greater investment in intra-regional trade and platforms. So let's start with education. Of course, you know, I'm going to talk about that. So firstly, we need to ensure that we're upskilling our nations, our entrepreneurs, our private sector and public sector professionals, individuals in trade policy and how to navigate business in this 21st century and unpredictable stage. How are we going to do that? For example, Barbados actually has many platforms that are available for education upskilling that are free of charge. So there's a National Transformation Initiative where you can, Barbados listening now on this flight, you can log in and get all of these courses, trade policy, how to change your budgets and all these different things for as an entrepreneur or business person in general. You can learn about all this for free on Coursera. So that's the first thing. Then we have the Youth Entrepreneurship Scheme. So if you are a business that's affected by this in any way, call them up. They have all the solutions and mentors that can assist you in this regard. So that's the education side of things. I'd also say, like, in general academia as well too, a greater concentration should be placed on trade policy as well, just to ensure that we're preparing our policy and our legal and our politician professionals for, and our economists for, these shocks. So that's education side. Then in terms of policy reform, we already have the Caribbean Single Market and Economy that came out of the Treaty of Chagaramas as well. So we've already, Caribbean has already laid a really great foundation for interregional trade. But what they're doing now, I think as recently as this week, they're now pursuing an order where they're seeking to revise the CSME and to make it even more easier and even more effective for territories to trade with one another. So I am saying that I agree with that. And I think that that policy reform is a great step. I believe Jamaica has just signed on. And I know that, you know, Barbados, all the rest will continue as it progresses. So that's policy. And then lastly, an investment into intra-regional trade platforms. We need our own Amazon, Phil. That's what I'm saying, all right? We already have platforms like Caribe Shopper. I know there is also, I think, Carib.net. They're also, but I know for sure there is, yes. So there's Caribe Shopper, and then there's also CARICOM, online companies registries, where you can go and see all of the businesses that are around the entire region that you can share and buy and sell with. Because what we want to do is focus on the inside, focus on us, right? Because the intra-regional trade will not attract those heavy tariffs. And by doing that, we circulate the money across the economy, we feed into each other's economies and raise the GDP, raise the growth, raise everything. And then we create then a stable economy for us that is by us. And that is how I believe that we have the opportunity to make these tariff policy changes a positive thing for our region.
And to your point, that's exactly what Ms. Tanis said yesterday. She said, look, we have to support regional items. And I'm hoping that we get out of our heads.
Correct.
That whatever is from America in these places are better than what we do. And
exactly.
Like you said, it's probably something this thing needs to happen.
Exactly.
In order for us to change the paradigm.
It's a catalyst.
In which we think. Yeah. That these people are better than us, and we will find a way to get it done. Thank you so much for your introspection. But before you leave, before I thank you, I want to ask you one last thing.
Sure.
This is totally off record.
Sure.
Now, both you and I have noticed that people are dancing differently now. Mm-hmm. They are dancing from behind. Mm-hmm. I went to a wedding the other day. This brother, first dance. As a matter of fact, this song I'm going to play is the first dance he danced with his wife.
Nice.
What's happening behind there? That no longer happens in front. You tell me.
I don't know. I'm just going to surmise that, you know what? I'm a big believer in innovation.
Okay.
So maybe there's an innovation happening here, of progression behind there that we're not certain on the dance floor, where people are just trying new things and just trying to experience each other and experience romance in new and fresh ways. I think that's what's happening, Phil.
Oh my goodness. And you know something? Everyone is going to believe you because you know something? No one has said it with more conviction than you have.
Thank you.
She's threatened, now we found the answer. She's threatened accordingly.
Yeah. Yeah. And she said, essentially, it's an ingenious way of being different.
Yes.
And it's a new way of being romantic. Mm-hmm. Finding out what's going on from behind there rather than front. But having said that, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
God bless you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Enjoy the flight.
Gentlemen, welcome to Classics International Airport. Local time is approximately 5 p.m. For your safety and comfort, please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the captain turns off the fastened seatbelt sign. This will indicate that we have parked at the gate and that it is safe for you to move about. On behalf of the entire crew, I'd like to thank you for joining us on this trip, and we're looking forward to seeing you on board again in the near future. Have a nice day.
Sheraton Mall.
Radio. Radio.
The Beach, 104.1 FM.
That's got me feeling this way.
From Barbados.
It beats me black and blue, but it loves me so good, and I can't get enough. Must be love on the brain.
The Caribbean. We are always here.
Hallelujah, hallelujah.
For you. The Beat, 104.1 FM, where FM means your favorite music.